This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
In a few minutes, when retirement just is not in the picture. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. We'll start with the Food and Drug Administration training its sights on a burgeoning industry, dietary supplements. The FDA has sent out 12 warning letters to foreign and domestic supplement manufacturers. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins us from Washington here. Nancy, this is about false or unsubstantiated claims these companies make about their pills and potions.
Yeah, these manufacturers are saying their supplements can cure Alzheimer's disease and cancer. The FDA says they may actually be spiked with drugs that aren't listed on the label, like the main ingredient for Viagra. The FDA is starting out with those warning letters telling companies to stop making false claims, and it can sue them if they don't correct these problems.
But there's an even bigger story here. The FDA is also thinking about changing the way it regulates this industry.
Right. Congress gave the FDA some authority 25 years ago, but these supplements don't go through the extensive testing and approval process that's required for drugs. And the dietary supplement business has grown from a $4 billion industry in 1994 to more than $40 billion today. So the FDA says now it's going to warn customers more quickly, change regulations. The FDA also says it's going to develop what it calls new enforcement strategies, but it's pretty vague about what that could involve.
Nancy Marshall-Genzer there on that $40 billion industry. Let's check markets. U.S. stock index futures are all up in the 7 to 8 tenths of 1% range with about 2.5 hours to go before the opening bell on Wall Street. London's 100 share index is up 0.3%. Crude oil down sharply yesterday, up today, 1.7% in New York. Now, what is likely a decent chunk of your household budget if you drive car insurance? The Consumer Federation of America has been looking at the data and finds that in California, car insurance premiums have risen more slowly over the last 30 years compared to the rest of the country. The consumer group argues that's because California strictly regulates that market, with lessons for us all. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports.
Californians spend almost 13% more on auto insurance than they did in 1989. The country as a whole spends 61% more. Doug Heller with the Consumer Federation of America credits regulation.
Insurance companies get away with as much as they're allowed to.
In California, insurance rate hikes have to be approved by the state. Insurers are also required to offer their lowest price to anyone who qualifies as a good driver.
Whereas in a lot of other states, the insurance companies throw up barriers to good drivers.
By that, Heller means insurers might base rates on credit scores or zip codes or even gender, as opposed to driving records. But Daniel Schwartz, professor at University of Minnesota Law School, says it's not clear that California's slower premium growth is due to regulation.
In many contexts, insurance rate regulation is not helpful.
One regulation that might lower prices, Schwartz says, is forcing insurance companies to use standardized policies.
So that people can shop on a more apples-to-apples basis.
He also says some insurance companies offer higher rates to people who they think won't shop around. So shop around. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
John in Minneapolis, Minnesota wrote to say how much he enjoys our coverage of the economy and that Marketplace helps him make strong arguments and combat misinformation about financial matters. To join John in supporting trustworthy, objective journalism, donate online at marketplace.org. Thanks to all the Marketplace investors who make our work possible.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
Workplaces are adapting. The wider labor market is adapting to people who want to stay employed later in life. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell argues in a new book that this is not just a function of the current tight labor market. His book is called Purpose in a Paycheck, Finding Meaning, Money, and Happiness in the Second Half of Life. Hello there, Chris.
Hello, David.
Congratulations on the birth of the new book.
Thank you very much. It's a huge relief that it's out there, it's in the public, and now I'm going to start getting some reactions.
All right, you sound like a new mom. Now, your book landed in the middle of a tight labor market. I mean, do you see labor conditions right now as a kind of antidote to age discrimination?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that's happening is more and more experienced workers, older workers, are staying engaged in the workplace or they're getting jobs, and you can just see it in the numbers. And I don't think a whole lot of it has to do with all of a sudden senior management and human resource departments are enlightened. It's that it's a tight labor market. And so my hope is that as managements work with experienced workers, that they actually do become enlightened and age discrimination declines, because age discrimination is real. But right now, we're living in a period of time where, hey, you can do the job, we'll hire you.
All right, so you can find an employer to get a job in the second half of life, but some people later in life make their own doggone workplace. They become entrepreneurs.
More than a quarter of all new businesses are started by people between the ages of 55 and 64. A lot of concerns about entrepreneurship. Are we going to continue to have the rates of entrepreneurship we had in the past? And what I say is, with the aging of the workforce, we're going to have more entrepreneurship, and this is really good for the underlying dynamism of the U.S. economy.
But I have to say, I mean, I've also studied entrepreneurship. It can be very hard. There can be 18-hour days. And I guess the flip side of this is, if you do this later in life, it also, I suppose, can give you energy.
You're right. And a lot of the businesses that are being created, David, they're called lifestyle businesses. So I've run into so many people that massage, running a yoga studio, doing something that they love, they have a certain passion for, they can charge money for, they can make an income. But this isn't the Silicon Valley I'm trying to make within the next year and a half a unicorn and beat all the competition and be first in the marketplace. Now, this is taking your skill and your knowledge and your experience and finding a way to make something of an income, doing something you enjoy, but not working 18-hour days.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell, his brand new book, Purpose in a Paycheck, Finding Meaning, Money, and Happiness in the Second Half of Life. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
And I used to pass the garage in Palo Alto, California, where Mr. Hewlett and Mr. Packard started what became Silicon Valley in the late 1930s. Now there's word the house where Mr. Bezos started Amazon is up for sale in Bellevue, Washington, asking $1.49 million, three-bedroom, one-and-three-quarter baths, with a garage. Our producers are Victoria Craig, Michael Lipkin, Daniel Shin, Sasha Woodruff. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.